you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch was probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio. Oh, no, no, no.
Witch Police Radio.
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. One of the things that I do on the show is, I always describe it as being for Manitoba artists and Manitoba adjacent artists. And the adjacent part often refers to people who, you know, were at one time here in Winnipeg or in Manitoba and have moved on to bigger and better things in other countries or other cities or other parts of the world. And I think that the guest I have on today is someone who can probably talk about that, about, you know, playing music in Winnipeg and then sort of going beyond. So I think the best way to start this off is if you want to introduce yourself and give a bit of background about what you do. And I know you have a new record that we want to talk about, so we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. My name is Ilya Osachuk. Like you're saying, I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba, grew up there, and I'm a jazz bassist and composer. Was educated at the University of Manitoba, and then in 2021 moved to New York City, studied at the Juilliard School, and then have since remained here, working here. And I sort of go back and forth. I still play anytime I can in Winnipeg, but I'm mostly based in New York City now.
Cool. Was New York always the goal? I mean, that seems like a city that would be great for jazz. I mean, just the amount of you know, records that come out of there and artists, and I'm sure there's tons of clubs and stuff. Was that where you were sort of always wanting to head, or did that how did that come up?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually an interesting question because it does lead to some sort of Winnipeg stories. A big thing for me always when I go after anything is I just want to do the best version of it. So for me, it was not a matter of New York necessarily. It was just that when I committed myself to doing and pursuing jazz music as like my career and as my life work, it was just, where is it? And then it happened to be that from all the people that I knew, the stuff that I had heard, New York seemed to be the place. Also, just to add on to that, I personally was very inspired by the, well, I don't want to call them the older generation because they're not old people at all, but like, people like Luke Selleck, Curtis Nosad, Jocelyn Gould, Carl Kohut, who then became my teacher. All of them had tenures in the United States and then in New York City themselves. And that was like a huge thing for me. Not being able to see a ton of international acts before I started studying the music. Some of my biggest influences were people who were coming back to Winnipeg from international places. And inspired me that way. So that's sort of how it came to be that I wanted to move to New York City eventually.
Cool. Well, I'm glad. Has it worked out now? I mean, now that you're in New York, are you happy with the decision?
Yeah, I am. I mean, it's a hard. New York is so much. Whenever people ask me about it, it is just simply information overload. And I think that that is really good if you can take advantage of it. I personally feel that right now I'm like still very much in a growing phase. Even having done this record that we're going to talk about in a minute, I still have so much that I feel like I want to learn and so much that I want to grow in how it is that I play and I compose. So yeah, it's a great place for me. But also, like, there's a lot to be said for being able to take advantage of that and then bring it back to somewhere like Winnipeg once you've done that learning, once you can actually, like, you know, sort of stretch out in your artistic practice, if that makes sense.
It does. And like you mentioned, there's so many people who, especially in jazz, who have done that in Winnipeg. I mean, you named a bunch of them. The list is this long. And I mean, yeah, they go and do big things. All of a sudden, there's a jazz fest show and they're back with, you know, whatever trio or quartet or however many people they had played with 20 years ago even. And it seems like there's always this kind of cycle of jazz artists going and coming back in Winnipeg. And there's a pretty crazy roster too. Like the amount of musicians coming out of here is nuts.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it if you didn't actually look at the list.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. The more I interview jazz artists, the more I've sort of learned this. Because I mean, I had, you know, years ago before I started really listening to a lot of local players, I had sort of a vague idea of how it worked and who were the people, and you know. But it's just so deep and rich, and there's just like such a strong group of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even you can go as far back as Ron Paley, you know, or like Ron Halderson, or people who were playing with like the CBC contingent that existed in Winnipeg. Like there was all these radio gigs that were happening, even like the 70s. And there was like a lot of great, really great musicians that were in the city all the time.
Yeah, it's for a small town, like a small town, big city, we definitely have, we punch above our weight for music, I think, in every genre, not just jazz.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree.
So you have this record that came out. When is it actually released? It's been a month or two now, or?
Yeah. So my album, The Answer, was released on November 1st, 2024. So, at time of recording, about almost 2 months.
Okay. So it's still pretty fresh. What is the response been to it so far? I mean, you know, I know we're in an era now where the way people consume music is totally different than it used to be. And a lot of people are just, you know, they're going on online or streaming services or Bandcamp or whatever to check it out. But have you had feedback like from people whose opinions you value, I guess, about you know, what they thought of the record?
Yeah, I actually have. I've been really lucky that I got a chance to work with this publicist, Ernesto Cervini, who does a lot of jazz recordings. Namely like Jocelyn Gould and Will Bonis.
Yeah, he's I've been in touch with him before about setting up interviews for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's great. And through him, I've been lucky to get a lot of reviews of the album, and most all of them have been really positive. I was definitely nervous because this is a debut for me. I had never released a full-length project or anything like that before. I've been really happy that it seems that people who are listening are getting what it is that I was trying to get them to listen for, which has been really, really nice.
So is that something that you're able to define, is what you wanted people to listen for with the record? I mean, I know it's a huge question, but
sure.
What were you trying to put across with this? I mean, after that first, and then we'll get into what I was going to say.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So I have a few guiding principles for this, but also just for my music making in general. The first one, especially for this project, obviously, is that I want to represent myself as best as possible.
Sure, for a debut, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't ever want the fact that it was a debut or that I'm an independent artist to get in the way you think on the album with regards to like production quality, production time, access. I didn't want the fact that I'm independent to get in the way of people being able to listen to it or being able to knock it down a peg and say, oh, it would have sounded better if it was recorded at this studio or whatever. I do truly feel that the product itself and how it's represented both in its musicianship and in its production is, and more than that, the next big thing that I really hope that everyone gets out of it is that I'm, as much as it is like a traditional album because it's a jazz album and I play jazz standards on it, I'm not trying to play them in a strictly traditional way. I'm trying at all points in my musicianship to be an innovator, because the people who I truly admire are all innovators or were innovators in their time when they were making music. So to me, the true tradition of jazz truly is innovation. So that was my big thing, was how can I make an album that is, you know, as a bassist featuring myself, but not in a way where it's just, oh, the bass plays the melody on every song. Like, how can I truly get creative with all elements of it? And it seems like a lot of people get that. They're like, oh, I listened to it and I didn't think about it like it was a bass album. I just liked the album.
So that
was a huge thing for me, you know.
Thank you.
Was that something you had to work hard to sort of figure out, or is that just sort of what naturally came out of the recording sessions?
Yeah, I would say it does take a lot of planning. I mean, I'm a planner. So for all of the stuff that we ended up recording, there were rehearsals before and a few changes were made in studio, but most of the stuff had been preconceived. And actually the original compositions on the album are some of my oldest.
Okay.
That I have been continuing to workshop over the last, few years. Like a lot of them started as ideas when I was still a student in Winnipeg, and then just didn't quite have the tools yet to realize their final form until maybe like a year or two ago. Did that make sense?
It does. It does. Yeah. It's always interesting when people have that kind of situation where it's a song that's been around for a while, and then especially with jazz, it's going to morph and change and develop and, and everything. So at what point, I guess, with a song like that, at what point do you know when it's done? I mean, because, you know, there's so many possibilities to, and this is more not like a general question about how does someone know when a song is done, but you personally, with your own compositions, like, is there a point where you say, okay, this, I can't touch this anymore. This is the final and permanent version of this?
Yeah, definitely there is. And I think it's something that just takes time. Like you're saying, like, how can you ever know when something's done? And, I myself am definitely a tinkerer. I change stuff a lot. I make a lot of edits. There's a lot of revisions of pretty much every song that I write or every arrangement that I do. And the only way that I've been able to figure out how something is done is to just do every revision that I can think of, to the point where I almost start making choices that detract from it. Like I'll take it to like the logical extreme where it's like, okay, change this, change this, change this, change this. And then I've made like 9 changes. And then now suddenly I'm like, oh, okay, well, actually, you know what? Maybe the older version was better. I can definitively say, okay, I've tried everything I can think of, and then this is the best one. Then I just kind of leave it alone. But yeah, I mean, it's funny with that, because some people, even myself included, write music really quickly, but it's always the last 10% for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'll go from 0 to 90% within 24 hours. Like I sketch it at night or something, and then I get up in the morning and I'll either play it on the bass and like sing the melody while I'm playing it, or I'll play it on a piano or something, you know, and get it to most of the way there. But you don't have a true sense of what it will actually sound like unless you've actually played it with people. And especially for my music as a jazz musician, because I'm playing with collaborators who are going to take liberties with it in ways that I won't expect, what it is that is like, quote, on the page and what is left off also informs how it is that people are going to play it. So that's like part of the process that I use to work it out, is I actually have to like play it several times in a live setting before I would consider doing a recording, because otherwise we'll get exactly what you're saying, which is, you know, oh, I wish I would have changed this thing, but you know.
Yeah, I guess that's always how it goes. Once you've done it, you actually like done it in that his natural element of life, right? You at least know what works, what doesn't, and hopefully what to cut.
Exactly.
To cut anything.
Yeah, I know exactly. I mean, that's the thing, and I'm personally a fan of like live style recordings. Like when we recorded it, we didn't punch anything. We were just doing full takes. So in that sense, yeah, it's very similar to how it would be in a live performance, maybe except for the length being a minute or two longer or short, depending on how we feel it goes that day.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that jazz is a genre too, that is something that you can easily do, not easily, but successfully do, is have that live sound, right? I mean, you can do it with any kind of music, but specifically jazz, I think because people are used to seeing it in a situation where there's improvisation happening and where it's all sort of, you know, changing on the fly and stuff. So I think it has like uniquely situated to be good for live style or live recordings.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think exactly what you're saying, there's such a long lineage of that being the case, that people are also more willing to hear that and hear like mistakes and just, you know, say that that's part of the character of the music, as opposed to something that is a lot more produced or quantized, like modern pop music or something like that.
Definitely, definitely. Do you feel that you, like, do you write more for feel or for technical specificity? We get, sorry, that word never comes out right. I mean, when you're composing something, is the vibe more important than the specific chords, notes, melodies?
That's a really good question. Wow.
Sorry to throw that. It's not an easy one to answer, I know.
No, no. I mean, but it's super valid. So that's I want to answer it as best I can. I would say honestly, because those things are almost hard to separate for me, because in some ways, like, the chords that are, like, important in a song give it the vibe.
Sure, that makes
sense,
yeah.
For me, right? Like, they almost sort of, like, interact in a symbiotic relationship, where if the melody is interpreted the way that I hear it interpreted, then the vibe will be right. But what I will say, actually, to comment on exactly what you're saying, I'm not someone who demands that you play exactly what I wrote. I'm always welcome to give all of my band members, like, leeway to be able to interpret the music in the way that they feel fits the vibe or the explanation or the narrative of the song. That's, like, something that I actually do a lot with time, especially with original compositions, is I explain it. Like, I have, like any artist who's ever pitched to radio or anyone like that has done, you do, like, song treatments that you're supposed to send to people, where you do, like, a 3-sentence breakdown of whatever it is that you're talking about with regards to the theme of the song. And I read those to the band if they've never played the music before, and say, hey, I wrote this song about, you know, I wrote this song in February about the fact that I often feel very introspective in that month, and the trajectory of the song ends in a point at the end of the month, which is a decision that I feel like I have to make every year. Cool. So that in mind, hopefully, will inform their actual performance of it and inform what liberties they take and what liberties they don't.
I've asked this of a few different people in different genres who play instrumental music, but writing a song, I mean, if you're in a band, you got a singer, there's lyrics coming out of it, whatever style of music you're doing, there's clearly, this is what the song's about. The person is blatantly saying it, like it's right on the surface. But obviously with instrumental music, it's kind of more, it's there. Always, everyone's writing songs about something, but it's not so obvious. It's more subtle. So how do you go about, I mean, what is it like to you to write a song about something? Like, so I'm not trying to think of how to word this. Like, I guess, how do you translate those emotions or those thoughts into an instrumental piece of music? Because it's so much more abstract than just straight singing.
Right. Right. No, that makes total sense. Yeah. And I would say largely the same way. What you point out in the fact that it is abstract is something that I think anyone who listens to instrumental music will feel, which is the idea that the motives of the composer may be different than what it is that the listener receives, right? Like the song might mean a different thing to the listener than it would,
of course,
me writing it. Like they might get a completely different thing than what I was intending. But I guess for me, so there's two ways to, in my mind, to like remedy this thing as an instrumental composer.
Okay. Right?
First being telling your audience exactly what it is that the songs are about.
And that helps.
Right. I mean it like in an extremely literal way. Like, that's something that I plan to do with pretty much any release that I've done, is like after a certain amount of time, I have liner notes for the project, like on the CD, like there's physical CDs and they have liner notes. And I plan to just release the liner notes, put them on Instagram and just say, hey, if you're ever curious, like you can read this. I actually did this. There's an interview, that I did on this publication called V13, and it's a track by track breakdown. And I just explain the motive of every song.
That's cool.
Like I don't personally feel that explaining the narrative of it ruins the surprise or ruins whatever the mystique.
You still have to hear it, right? It still comes out. Yeah. The music's still going to happen, and you can't expect it. You can't predict it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that way, that happens with the sort of music, which is that ultimately you can't control what it is that people are going to think about it or how they'll react to the music.
Yeah.
But also that's okay. Like,
yeah, totally.
Something
that
I think about with regards to that is, abstract expressionist art. I don't think you can see, but above me is Mondrian Boogie Woogie and Mark Rothko number 10. I have these prints from Museum of Modern Art that I look at every day. But the idea behind that type of art is that the meaning is whatever it decides, or whatever the viewer decides that the meaning is. Like, it could just be a field of color, or it could be whatever it means to you. So what I would say to anyone who's listening is, you know, I have my own reasons for composing this music, but if you listen and you get something else out of it, if it means a different thing to you, then it means that to you, and that's good. I just hope that it makes you or allows you to be in touch with a different side of yourself than you would regularly.
I think that to an extent, that same thing happens with any kind of music, even with vocals. The fact that once it's out in the world, it's out of your hands, right? Whatever you intended with the song, it's gone now. I mean, you can listen to it and get that feeling or those thoughts, but you know, we get five people, they're all going to interpret it differently, especially with instrumental music, especially with jazz, where they're going to, depends what they like, what, you know, what those kind of sounds evoke in them, the instrumentation and stuff. So yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I haven't played in a band in many years, and my bands were not very complex music, but it seems like it'd be a little bit, what's the word? A little bit of anxiety about sort of not knowing how people are going to take these things, especially if it's something personal, especially if it's something that, you know, lyrics or not, that is coming from like a real place within you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you're right. I think it is really personal, and it is a very vulnerable thing.
Sure. Yeah.
But I would also say that, one of my like big tenets that I was taught growing up was just to try to lead by example. And I find that if, at least I try to be a more open person, be a more, you know, openly like introspective or emotional person who is willing to share things that might not be comfortable or resolved, the more I hope other people will do the same thing. Like a lot of my music, like when I think about what it is that it sort of means, is you know, obviously very much rooted in wanting to make people feel, but I'm not necessarily going for people to feel like happy or sad. I just want them to feel
you know, something.
A lot of my music, like I wrote this song Waltz for Jay that's on the album, and that song is about systematic oppression. Like the whole theme of that song is like, why do we keep repeating this? Why do we keep doing this, guys? Can we stop with the ridiculous culture wars and like the ridiculous polarity that we're out of societies on Earth right now? Like, can we not see how this has played out before? And my hope
over and over and over again, yeah.
Exactly, right. So, you know, that is not a happy song, but I hope that it inspires people to consider that in themselves and consider that in how it is that they interact with the world to, you know, either look at what it is that their behavior is or look at what it is that other people's behavior is and make decisions that are going to help them in the long run or be positive impacting for a long time. Even though it's not like, you know, hunky-dory, super easy music to listen to.
No, but it shouldn't be, right? I mean, I think that especially in, I mean, this is kind of a whole other topic, but I mean, you often hear that in shitty times, the art is so much better because people have something they want to say. If everything was perfect,
yeah,
art would still be good, but it wouldn't, no one would have anything to, not complain, but to feel emotions about, right? I mean, everything's happy all the time. It's kind of like, okay, this is nice, but there's no conflict. I think that a lot of music and art and any kind of art, you need that conflict in there to make it sort of, continue to grab your attention, right? And want to see it through and see how it resolves, if it resolves.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think you're right, and it's a shame that like these sorts of tragedies have to happen in order for that to happen.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
I agree that sometimes the most profoundly beautiful things come from
the worst situations,
horrible tragedies. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Not that your album is about horrible tragedies, but. Connecting to the personal reasons for, yeah. Okay, so yeah. If someone's hearing about you for the first time on this show or has heard you before when you were in Winnipeg and wants to know what you're up to, what's, first of all, the best way to hear the album and then how to find you online to see what you're up to?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so yeah, the best way to listen to the album is any number of ways. It's on all major streaming. If you want to purchase one, it's on Bandcamp, just bandcamp.com/Ilya Osichuk, which is my name.
That's where I was listening today.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, so it's pretty much everywhere that streaming can allow you to be. For those who have not heard of me before or want to keep up with what it is that I'm doing, you can follow me on my various social media, and that's all linked through my website, IlyaOsichuk.com. I'm on Instagram at IlyaOsichuk. You can find me there. For people in Winnipeg, I actually am coming to Winnipeg very soon. I'm doing a release show at the Gas Station Arts Center on January 17th. Yeah, so it'll be Friday, January 17th. I'm bringing a band from New York, which is really amazing. So thank you so much to the Manitoba Arts Council for making that possible, for it's going to be really fantastic. I mean, we're like renting a piano, we're bringing in a piano for it. Like, so it's going to be a really, really great show. And we actually also have special guest John Gordon who's going to come and play some saxophone on some of the songs as well.
Well, and I saw that he wrote some liner notes on your Bandcamp page.
Exactly right. Yeah. So John is a former teacher of mine. I mean,
he's been on my show.
Yeah, exactly. You know, phenomenal musician, person. John helped me. I studied composition with him when I was studying. I did my bachelor's degree at the University of Manitoba in the jazz program. So when I was actually recording the album, since John is also one of these people that's back and forth a lot, I wanted him to be a part of it. And he wasn't going to be in town when I was doing the last recording session with Donald Bega and Billy Drummond. Because, well, he has like a historical relationship with Billy. They grew up and sort of were playing together in New York in like the 90s. So I wanted to try to get them together somehow, and it didn't work this time. But John so graciously wrote such great liner notes for the project, and now I only feel it right to include him in the release because he was so instrumental in my growth as a musician.
Right on. And then how does someone get tickets to the release? Where can you find tickets for that?
Yeah, well, it'll both be on my website, and it'll also be on the Gas Station Arts Center's website. And the ticket link will definitely be live by the time that
people hear this.
By the time that people hear this, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, very cool. I mean, I'm glad you still come back. I mean, you know, I feel like it's a thing with Winnipeggers that you leave and you can't not come back, regardless of what you do. I mean, I know people who do completely non-artistic jobs and they come back too. It happens. It's like a weird magnet.
It's true. It's true. I mean, the number one draw always is the people. I miss all of my family and friends so much. And it's always been such a great, warm reception that I've had coming back to play in Winnipeg. I'm always nervous about that. I'm always, because you hear these like horror stories about artists who come back to play in their hometown and they're like, you left, like you're not
Winnipeg
anymore. Yeah. But I've never experienced that in Winnipeg. It's always been so much positive energy and love for what it is that I do, which is so special. So thank you to everyone who has supported me so far. And yeah, I hope to see you all at the Gas Station on January 17th.